Welcome to Hidden Voices, the podcast series which explores the less heard voices in health and social care. I'm Sharon and I work for Healthwatch Essex. It's our job to make sure that people's experiences help to improve health and social care services. In this episode, we're talking to Anemia, a drag artist who has a rare blood issue that has allowed her to become a super blood donor to newborn babies and pregnant women. So Anemia, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much, it's a pleasure to be here.
You're looking absolutely fabulous.
Thank you very much.
But when all this started, you weren't feeling quite too fabulous, were you?
No, well, first time I gave blood, 1992. And that's because of family issues, and I felt I had to do it. And I've been a blood donor now since, so I've got, over 30 years. And I got to my 96th donation. And then out of the blue, I was told I couldn't donate and I had to go and see a doctor urgently. Anyway, transpires. I have anemia, a very rare form of anemia. And it's controlled, but it has left me with some health issues. And started off with low iron. So diagnosed anemia, straightforward, low iron, take the pills, come back 3 months later for a review. I did that absolutely fine, back on the register. Woo, giving blood again. During the review process, where they do more blood tests and they look at medication, they checked and my white blood cells had dropped by almost half. And so instantly I'm thinking leukemia, because clearly the bone marrow, if the bone marrow is not producing the white blood cells, what the hell is going on? So I feared the worst, but no, it's not leukemia. It is just a very, very, very rare form of anemia, which has cascaded into me becoming a neo blood donor and having superpowered blood.
So at that point, it was really worrying for you and you weren't feeling too good at all.
No, it was very interesting. How I found out, apart from going to the doctors and having a blood test, blah, 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 was I went to give blood when I was back on the register and a haematologist sitting opposite me, very much like now. And the conversation went like this. Don't get sick, don't get injured, and don't go into any hospital, because if you get an infection that you can't handle, your body can't handle, you are in serious trouble. Now that you are pure blood neo, you have to take extra care of yourself.
That's quite a frightening thing to be told.
Well, it's the first I'd heard of it. So if you imagine you're told by your doctor, you just got low iron and just take the iron pills. Mm. And then I increased my red blood cell count and I was fine. I was back on the register. So then absolutely 100% out of the blue, next time I go to give blood, a hematologist sits me down and says, guess what? Massive shock. And I'm sitting there and I'm staring at him and he's sitting there, this hematologist, looking at the white lab coat, that pristine, with the pens. And he's explaining to me the science, which I can tell you now is fascinating. How this came about is fascinating. But I'm just looking at the pens. I'm looking at the pens in that top pocket, the red, the blue, the black. And I'm just thinking, well, what are the pens? And he's trying to explain things to me. And my mind is spinning, thinking, well, what does this mean? What does this mean? And I'm thinking, right, well, the blue pen is clearly for the birthday cards and the leaving. And the black pen is clearly for the medical notes. But what happens if he reaches through the red pen? You see a doctor sitting there with a red pen and you think, ooh, the red pen. That looks good. So then words. And he kept telling me all these things and I'm just listening, but really I wasn't paying attention because I couldn't take it in.
It was shock.
Absolute shock. And when he said to me, oh, and your condition can prove fatal, so please take care of yourself. And it was like, right, okay, what is this? What has happened to this body? And I'd better move quickly and find out exactly what's going on.
So you'd been given information that was going to really change your whole life.
Everything. Absolutely everything changed. It changed like that. Because I had no idea. I mean, it's still a learning curve. A neo blood donor. There aren't many of us. The cytomegalovirus, which is the umbrella term for the herpes virus. Turns out I've never ever, I mean, I didn't know this, but I've never been exposed to the herpes virus. And that's what makes me super rare. There are only estimated, according to the NHS, there are only 10,000 B neg neo donors in the whole of the UK.
I'm envious simply of the fact that you've never had a cold sore.
Never had a cold sore. and I never had the MMR. So when I was growing up, and that's an interesting thing, I'm going to look into this myself. Never had the MMR vaccine because my family wouldn't allow it. And we're talking, you know, we're going back to the 1970s. We're going back a long way before people were like, oh, vaccines. Oh, no. The anti-vaxxers. We're going a long way before that. So yeah, it's interesting to me. Never had the MMR and I've never had the herpes virus in any way, shape or form because, you know, it's a wide thing. Yeah, never had a cold sore. Never had chicken pox. And of course, when the body is exposed to those antibodies, they're in there for life. And that's another thing. You see, I think of, and I'm going back now for your older listeners will know this, the Ready Breck kids.
I remember.
Right, TV commercial, two kids on their way to school. They come out of the house. It's a freezing cold morning. And because they've had a big bowl of porridge, big bowl of Ready Breck, they've got these imaginary sort of orangey red lines around their whole bodies.
A glowing aura.
Yes, exactly. And that's how I see myself. I see myself like that every minute of every hour of every day.
But it took some time to adjust and feel that way, didn't it?
Massive. I mean, I'm still dealing with it now. And the diagnosis was a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. And it terrifies me.
How do you go home with that parcel of information and start to process it?
Oh, I mean, I love it in one respect because I know that I'm actually doing something that's super, super important to the NHS and to blood research and the National Blood Transfusion Service, which is something that's really, really, really close to my heart. But to know that I'm going that extra mile, so I'm not a regular donor, I'm a neo donor, so woo, super powered blood. And that's because I just think there aren't many of us, but I'm terrified of suddenly getting one of these viruses, suddenly, because it can attach itself to my body at any time, and then I'm no longer Neo, I'm just a normal donator.
Which is still amazing.
It is still amazing, and I've got 98 donations. I mean, I'm giving my 99th next month. Woo!
Brilliant.
I know. But yeah, when they told me, I mean, I did go into a depression because I did start to think, well, if a haematologist says your white blood cell count is probably less than half than what it should be, and it can, and your new condition can prove fatal. It's like, yeah, I went into a bit of a depression because you start to think, well, does this mean I'm now going to become sick? Mm. They said the anemia that came out of absolute nowhere, they said, was quite rare. To have all this on top of me, sometimes I wish I never knew. Mm. Sometimes I wish somebody had never, I wish that haematologist had never said to me, oh, by the way, don't do this and don't do this and don't do this. I now absolutely do not do this.
And if you hadn't been donating blood, you might well never have found out.
No, never have known. And what interests me is how many people out there walking the streets right now could be donors, but they're just not. Mm. So, and I just think, the National Health Service, which is in a poor state, needs more support, needs more help.
So what does it actually mean for those of us that aren't particularly medically...
Okay, so
what does it mean for your blood?
Right, so my blood cells have never been exposed to this virus, and so they do not carry the antibodies. Now, if you have a seriously ill mother in delivery, or if you have a newborn baby that is seriously ill and needs blood, you could not give the seriously ill mother in delivery or the newborn baby normal donated blood, because normal donated blood is full of antibodies. And you can't flood, and I call it flooding, that new life with donated blood that's carrying all those antibodies, because it can cause organ failure and serious illnesses. And in the rare cases, it will cause death to the baby. So they need people like me.
And you don't have all those antibodies.
I don't have these antibodies. But what I have to realise is I'm constantly cold. I get cold really quickly. I get tired really quickly. So my energy levels go down really, really quickly. Because so you can't give the baby normal donated blood because it's got all the antibodies, blah, blah, blah. So they need people like me. Now, I'm B neg. So 2% of the UK population who are donating are B neg. And then to be neo on top, I am one of the 10,000 in the whole of the country. And you think, any hospital that's got a maternity unit that's going to have sick babies right now, and you know, I may be the only chance that that one baby in whatever percentage has of living. And the mother, of course, because you've got the seriousness of your mother in delivery needing transfusion. You know, that's when they need me.
So you went quite a full circle there from being in a depression and really worried about what you've been told.
Yeah.
To thinking, actually, I can do something good with this.
I switched it round. So at first, when they said, well, you've got anemia and you can't give blood and you've got to go away and take all these pills, I did go into depression because I just thought, well, what else do I do to help people? I mean, I come from a kind of a social working background. So I used to work with the homeless. I've worked with HIV, substance misuse, physical disabilities team, Haringey Council. So I've always had that helping background. And to be told, oh, no, you can't give blood because of this reason, it was a massive shock. Thank God, not only am I back on the register, that I'm doing something that's just super important.
It's clearly important to you for a sense of purpose.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, okay, so let's go back. Let's talk about some history. So I am a 1971 model. I know. 1971. So the day I'm born, Apollo 14 launches into space. President Nixon, Richard Milhouse Nixon, who has been unfairly treated by history, but I'm a huge fan of Richard Nixon, was president of the United States. Carry On Henry was filling cinemas across the land. I mean, we're going...
The days of the Carry On.
I know, 1971.
Those.
And so, anyway, so I am hatched upon the world. And everything's fine until 1976. I am 5 years old and my father is diagnosed with a pancreatic cancer. It came on very fast. It was very aggressive and he died very quickly. And he died in a hospital and the surgeons were pumping, as my mum tells me, the surgeons were pumping untold pints of blood through his organs, trying to keep him alive. And she had to make that terrifying decision to turn off the machines. I can't imagine that. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that a wife or a mother, knowing that she's got two kids at home, knowing she's got to switch off, telling the switch off the machine. I mean, oh my God, terrifying. And I knew from a very early age that because the surgeons and the doctors did everything they could to keep my father alive, I just thought, I have to do that. I have to give something back. I have to contribute, even though we're talking 1976.
But inspired you.
Oh yeah, completely. It's like my calling, absolute call. I mean, people talk about callings and then that's what I have to do. And I can't stop and I will absolutely not stop. And I use the drag and my performing to get that message across. So I'm just trying to get a message out there that A, that we need more donors and B, that you can be a little bit different and embrace yourself.
But so what came first, the drag or the actual anemia?
The anemia came first, but it was followed very shortly by the drag. The first time I performed on stage was 18th November 2021 at the Royal Vauxhall Tavern, which is a place that's very, 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 very special to me. And I do not sing, I do not dance, and I do not lip sync. I'm a little bit different, but I tell stories, and I'm a drag storyteller, and I will also do Shakespeare. And I'm known for doing the whole of Macbeth as a one-woman show. So that's kind of what I do. I want to deliver a message. I just want to get, you know, I don't want to lip sync to a Shania Twain or a Lady Gaga song. I actually want to do something that's meaningful,
that
might
across.
Yes, exactly, that might make people think, oh, that's interesting, I never thought about being a blood donor. Or if you can give encouragement to one person to kind of embrace themselves or to try something new with their lives because they've never thought they've had the confidence, and then if they look at me, they look at a clown like me staggering around in ridiculous heels, and maybe they think, yeah, I can get that. So, yeah, that's what I'm about at the moment. I'm really about just trying to write a story and get a message out there and coming up with new ways to get that message across.
So how influential was the blood donation and the issue with your blood in creating anemia?
Okay, so everybody talks about you've got to find your drag name because there are some amazing performers out there with amazing names. And you think, oh, I love that. That's so clever. And I was looking for my drag name. And then when they said, well, actually, you have anemia. And I thought, that'll do. So A-N and then N-E-M-I-A. I played around with it for a little bit. But yeah, anemia, I thought, yeah, that'll do me.
So when you were creating the act,
yeah,
the blood issue was uppermost in your mind?
Always. Always. I mean, believe me, the blood issue is in the front of my mind as soon as I wake up and until I go to bed at night. A, because I'm usually trying to come up with new ideas to get the message across or to new ideas for a performance. But yeah, it's super, super important to me. Yeah, I mean, I even bought one of those tracker watch things, you know, the Fitbits. I bought one of those.
Yeah.
Just so I could keep an eye on the heartbeats per minute. Became a little bit obsessed.
And you get told, don't you, where your blood has gone? And
yeah, that's one of the most innovative things that the National Health Service have done is you donate blood and within usually 10 days to 2 weeks, you get an email and you'll get a text message and on there it will tell you exactly where your donation has gone to which hospital. And there's an interactive map in the email they send you and you can actually follow the route. Which I love.
It's got to be quite addictive.
Yeah, it's great fun, isn't it? Because, well, we live in an amazing technological age. And I just think to actually know, for so many years I've been donating, absolutely no idea where it ends up. You know, even if it gets used or if it gets destroyed. Because I think they can only keep the cells alive for 28 days. And then I think they have to be destroyed. So it's like, it's just really, really nice now that every donor can see exactly where. You know, it's like really, and that just
following the story through to the end, story. Almost,
and
it?
Especially when I see that it's gone to something, to a hospital, you know, with a well-known maternity unit, and you think, yeah, that's exactly where it needs to be, and that's what I really love.
So, do you have any idea of how many people, mums, babies, your blood has helped so far?
They say there could be an average of one donation helping four patients. But I think that's for a regular donor. I mean, for me, it would. I imagine, I could be wrong, but I imagine my whole donation would be for one mother in delivery or one seriously sick baby. Because, yeah, I just imagine that they would need that blood. You know, and we only talk, I mean, what is it, 3/4 of a pint, something like that? Mm. So even you think, that's not a lot. But if you've got a baby or a mother that just needs blood constantly pumping through and going around, then yeah, I imagine one donation, one patient. I could be wrong. So.
It must be really satisfying to know that there's lives out there surviving.
Oh yeah,
I'm
building an army. I am building an army of mini-me's. I know, isn't it fantastic? This is how I see it. Because I will never know them. I will never speak to them. I will probably never ever see them. But they are alive and walking, hopefully, walking the streets and getting on with life. And I've kind of helped make that happen. And that just means everything. So, yeah, so I'm building an army of mini-me's.
And you do bring that into your drag act, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
And that's been well received by people.
Yeah, people love it. I mean, I'm a bit of a clown when I'm on stage because I use props. Mm-hmm. And I use sound files. And I tap into every kind of thing that's out there. So, yeah, so I use pieces of music and, you know, I use sound clips from films and things like that to get people's attention. And obviously I put on the face and I play with my props on stage. And, yeah, anything that makes people think, oh, and keep the attention. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
So tell us a bit about the anemia act.
So I will go on. Obviously, there'll be a big intro piece and I'll come on wearing some ridiculous costume. Sometimes with great big LED goggles, you know, and I really go for that whole sci-fi kind of look, you know, because I'm a sci-fi kid from the 70s, you know. So, yeah, I go for something with a little bit of mystery. And then I would just simply stand there. Quite often I don't use a microphone because I'm quite loud. And I will just start to tell my story to the whole room. But it always starts, I make it quite linear, so it will start in 1971, it will start from when I'm born, then I will talk about my father dying, and then that leads on to why I became a blood donor, and then the adventures of being a blood donor, so yeah.
And did you always have that kind of theatrical performing part of you? No.
Not at all. The very first time I performed, I burst into tears. And I burst into tears in front, in a room in front of some of the top queens working across the Essex scene, and I thought, oh, this is going well. But I think they kind of, they got it. They got it. I mean, the thing is, you know, I'm 53 years old. What the hell am I doing in Ridiculous Heels jumping around on the stage? Because there are some amazing performers out there, half my age, who can do an amazing look, you know. So I thought, right, well, I'm not going to be a singer. I'm not going to be a dancer. And I'm clearly not going to do the lip syncing. So tell a story.
But there's always been an important place for storytellers.
Yeah, always.
In society.
Always. I mean, who doesn't love a good story? Once upon a time. Yeah, I love that. And because I grew up with Jack and Ori. Again, ancient history. Jack and Ori, which was a wonderful, wonderful BBC series going back to the 70s, 80s. And you would hear the most amazing stories. It just really, I mean, it just grabbed me. So that's what I want to do. I want to do a lot more of it. But I've got to come up with some new angles to get the message across.
Yeah, I'm sure you will.
Oh, hopefully.
So how did it become drag that was the way that you did decide to express yourself?
Okay, so I've loved Shakespeare. I've always loved Shakespeare. Even though there's a lot of the plays I still do not understand. And the languages can be quite difficult to pick up. But the idea of Elizabethan times, ladies, women, not being allowed to perform on stage because it was just seen...
not acceptable.
Yes, exactly. So that men would have to go on and play the roles of the female characters. And I just, something in that struck a chord with me. And I just thought, that's so interesting. I want to explore that. I mean, I've had good experiences and bad experiences. And it's all about education. What I'm trying to say is I don't dress at home and I don't practice my makeup enough at home. I really should teach myself to use eyeliner, for God's sake. But anyway, I only get dressed and I only embrace the drag if I know I'm performing.
So we wouldn't see Anemia making a brew in your kitchen?
No, not at all. Right. Never. You will see me at a storytelling festival or a folk festival or something like that with a bit of a look, because you always get storytellers at festivals. And occasionally I get lucky enough to perform at East Anglia Storytelling or...
So back to the Shakespeare part.
Yeah, Shakespeare. Yeah.
You were saying about the men having to play the parts of women.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit more about how that evolved with your act.
Macbeth is my favourite Shakespeare play. Who doesn't love a bit of drama, a bit of death? And witches. Ooh. For me, it was the obvious choice for my first Shakespeare play. And it gave me a chance to embrace something so different. I mean, drag is now becoming very, very accepted. There's a lot of new young queens out there that are doing amazing things. There are some great performers, great dancers out there. But I'm sticking to two things. I am sticking to the Shakespeare and the storytelling, but also I work off the page. Now, a lot of storytellers do not like that. They always say, oh, you should memorize lines. No, back in Elizabethan days, those actors would turn up on the day of the theatre. They would be given a small slip of paper with their words, and they were like, there you go, perform it. They didn't get a little chance to rehearse or practice or learn the lines. No, straight on stage, because they had to do 3-4 productions every week. Not like theatre land now.
So it's a pretty unique way to get your message across.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, believe me, I have tried to memorise my lines, but it's just not happening. And that's another interesting thing, because doing a lot of research with the anemia, it does seem that working people who have anemia and working memory problems, so common. So it's like, yeah, I can't really remember anything these days. I mean, oh my God, I'm terrible. And so I thought, yeah, no, stick to the page. Yeah. Yeah, let's go back to Shakespeare. So a common misconception, which makes me laugh, also makes me cry at times, is that everybody thinks, or a lot of people thought, that D-R-A-G, dressed as girl, was somehow down to Shakespeare. Because obviously, Elizabethan times, women were not permitted to perform on stage. And so there's this idea that Shakespeare would write down the one side of the script, D-R-A-G, which of course is an acronym, and they did not have acronyms back in the 16th century. So it's an absolute farce. So if anybody insists that D-R-A-G, dressed as a girl, is from Shakespeare's day, then yes, it may be, but it is not drag, because they did not have acronyms back
then.
That's
not when it was born.
No, no. I mean, the truth is nobody really knows. I mean, I'd love to know, but nobody really knows. But it is not Shakespeare, I'm afraid to say.
And what about when it was born for you? Had you previously been interested in things like cross-dressing?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, the subject fascinates me, and it always has. It always has. From the very first time I saw Rocky Horror, I think a lot of people
probably. It's an amazing.
Yeah, the first time you ever see the Rocky Horror Picture Show, I think that obviously put a seed somewhere in my brain. And it was many years later when I first saw a drag queen in Soho walking down Brewer Street in this tiny, tiny little gold dress. I mean, we're going back to the 80s. Tiny little gold dress, puffing away on this enormous cigar. There was clouds of smoke everywhere. And people were laughing at this queen, who I have to tell you now was about 6.5 foot tall and pretty big built. And people were laughing. And she said the funniest thing. She said, "You can laugh now, but one day we'll be in charge." And I thought, I loved that. And I just watched in awe as this vision in a tiny gold dress just glides past me. And I thought, ooh. And it wasn't until many, many, many years later that I bought my first pair of high heels.
And you've got an amazing pair of high heels today. I don't even know how to walk in those.
These are only 5 inch, but these are my signature red thigh high boots, which a lot of people have seen and know me for, and I always wear these when I'm performing.
But they're not your tallest pair, are they?
No, I have eight inch stripper heels, as I like to call them, but I have fallen over in them once down a flight of stairs at a club in King's Cross, and I just realised no, because it's a long way to fall. Wearing an 8-inch heel, it's a long way to fall anyway, and on stairs is not a good look.
No, that could have been quite nasty.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, because when you feel the ankle go, oh my God, that's pain. So, yeah, I recovered, but I thought, no, I'm not doing that.
Pain in the name of art.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, pain is beauty. So, yeah, so the 8-inch heels only come out for very special occasions, whereas the 5-inch block, I can wear this anywhere all day long.
And what sort of venues, what sort of events do you go to as an EMEA?
Okay, so I've been very, very lucky that some of the Essex crowd have kind of adopted me in a small way. So I have done the Drag Queen Storytimes, Colchester Library and Manningtree Arts Centre, which was an amazing experience. And apart from that, you will find me occasionally, I'm lucky enough to work on the door of a club. It's somewhere usually in London, which is, I get into all this and I just check tickets and say hello and meet and greet. Mm-hmm. And occasionally somebody lets me on stage. Woo! But I see it as you've just got to get your face out there. You've got to just be seen and support the work that everybody else is doing.
And it's all opportunities to make the connections.
Yeah,
and
always.
Spread your message.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, as I said to you, I'm not a dancey, singing, lip-syncy, but I want to tell stories. But you've got to make people kind of think, yeah, what is a spoken word performer in drag? What is that? And you've got to make people suddenly embrace that and think, oh, you know, he's actually going to tell me a story. This is interesting. I've never knew this before. Like, for instance, not many people, I mean, I didn't know this for a lifetime, but not many people knew that you can't give normal donated blood to a newborn baby or as serious as your mother in delivery. I didn't know that. Yeah, it's like, oh, and a lot of people have said to me, I never knew that because of all the antibodies. Yeah, that person has learned something tonight, which makes all this worth it. If I can just influence one person to be themselves or to help somebody else or to try something different, then it's all been worth it, the good and the bad.
And have people come up and spoken to you about blood donation and the neo
absolutely
donation?
Absolutely, because I always try to make myself accessible and talk to people anyway. So yeah, I've talked to doctors, I have talked to GPs, I have talked to hospital workers. They all love what I'm doing. And the NHS, I mean, Okay, I regularly donate at the Bishopsgate Institute, which is so handy because it's dead opposite Liverpool Street Station. So I get off the train, cross the road, get a coffee, cross the road, get back on the train, and I'm home again. They love me in there, because I'm a bit of a character. But I have promised on my 100th donation I will go in there and donate in full drag.
Which is very soon.
Yeah. I mean, it'll be late summer, because 99 is next month. And as long as nothing goes wrong, then we're looking at April, May, June. Yeah, we're looking at August. August for the 100th. Woo!
Might be something we have to join you for.
Absolutely.
It's an amazing achievement, though.
Okay. Oh, I'll be so pleased when I get to 100. So pleased.
And people, just members of the public that see your act, do they come to you and talk about the blood donation?
During my performance, I usually find out how many other donors there are in the room. And I think when I start to explain the science and how necessary we are, I've undoubtedly influenced a few people to maybe take that step forward. I hope so anyway.
It's an incredibly important thing to do, isn't it, for those that can.
One of those babies might grow up to become a writer or a doctor or a scientist, or might go on to solve some of the most important issues that we are now having to deal with in years to come.
And every life deserves a chance.
Absolutely. And yeah, plus also I'm trying to buy my way into heaven. I just think that when I was younger, I probably was not a very nice person to a lot of people. And I just wish if I could go back now, I would repair so much damage that I've done. And so now I just see that the blood donation is just the one thing I can do to actually help future people. And when I was given the diagnosis and told it could prove fatal, I went on a mad mission to just be nicer to everybody.
And that's a huge piece of information to be given, isn't it? So what does having good health mean for you now?
Health is a big thing with me, because if I haven't got the health, and if for some reason they turn around to me and they say, oh, you can no longer be a blood donor, it's that would be absolutely crushing. So I'm in the gym 5-6 days a week. And the plan is to do the splits, front splits, in these heels, on stage.
How close are you?
I'm about 6-7 inches off the ground. So I'm getting there. I reckon another 12 months and I will have the full front split.
How long before you can get back up from
that? Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the moment, I'm creaking around like an old person trying to get back up. But if I can do that, if I can go on stage, start telling my story, and ever so slowly do this, I just think that would be quite fun. Quite a fun thing to see.
It would be an impressive sight.
Yeah. And I used to be a lot smaller. I've noticed I've got, because I now do weights, because I run, I do weights, and I do a lot of stretching, I do Pilates. I've actually got quite big up top because of the weights. And so I'm having to return dresses. So annoying. I buy designer dresses, Karen Millen, Phase 8. Having to return them now because I can't fit into a 16.
That's heartbreaking.
Outrageous. Yeah, so I've got a whole wardrobe full of the most amazing designer dresses, which I'll probably never have to wear.
Get them altered?
Yeah, I do. I have a wonderful seamstress, lives in Witham, and she pins me and squishes me and, does all the right things.
That sounds like the way to go for a good dress.
Absolutely. I'm blessed with having an amazing group of female business women around me. I'm so lucky. So the nails, I get the nails done every couple of weeks. Thank you, Emma. And I have my eyebrows threaded. I have Botox. I have had 4 laser hair removal, which is horrible and a complete waste of time and money. So I do not recommend laser hair removal. It didn't work for me. And yes, I'm always having these tweakments, as the kids like to call them.
Botox is very popular these days.
Yeah, Botox. Oh, and lip filler. I now have lip fillers as well. Screamingly painful. Don't quite know why I do, but I do. I love it as well. And I've been very, very lucky, because as soon as I decided I was going to have all these procedures, I did contact the blood donor and I asked, and they said, no, absolutely no effect whatsoever. So it's absolutely, so I'm good. I'm fine. Yeah, I am not willing. There are so many things in my life that I will not do because I'm not willing to take a chance on me losing the NEO badge or them saying, sorry, you can no longer be a blood donor, because that would absolutely crush me. Absolutely crush me. I don't know how I would recover from that.
And hopefully that won't happen, but even if it did, worst case scenario, you've achieved so much through what you've donated already.
Yeah, I mean, not bad for 53.
Not at all.
I've got lots of different ideas in my head at the moment about how to help more people, but in different ways.
And that's brilliant. That's just amazing.
Oh, thank you very much.
I think so, yeah. And you know, I wish you every success in getting to all these places and just spreading your word.
Yeah, absolutely. And if some good can come of it, if I can just help one person, then everything's been worth it.
You've already done that, I think.
Oh, thank you very much.
Thank you, Anemia, for sharing in part one, and we will be back in a moment with part two. So, in the second part of our podcast, we're going to play our game, Full Disclosure. I'm going to ask you some questions from the cards in front of us. Each one has a thought-provoking question written on it. So when you're ready, I'll pick a card at random, and you have to answer.
Oh, can we shuffle the cards first?
You're going to have to answer them all anyway, so...
Okay, then.
Okay, Anemia, firstly, which health service would you give a bouquet of flowers to?
It could only be the one. It would only be the National Blood Transfusion Service. Yeah.
Perfect. What do people assume about drag that is not true?
The negative assumptions are that we are somehow slightly deviant. I've had that we shouldn't be going anywhere near children, let alone libraries. Yeah, I mean, we've all got a whole suitcase full of bad stories. And that's another thing I am desperate to break, that whole cycle. Okay, so there's a pub I went to perform in, and actually it was fantastic because this proves my point completely. It was a pub in East London, full of football fans, all in the strip shirts. And I walked in there to do my story. It was part of an open mic storytelling thing. And I went in there and I did all this. And I thought, my God, you know, there's a pub full of football fans in their football strip. They are going to love me. And strangely enough, they absolutely did love me. They ate up every word, every piece of my Shakespeare. They ate it up. And I thought, if you can get a pub full of football fans who have probably never, ever had a drag performer stand right in front of them and tell them a story, and for them to take on every word you're saying, I thought, yeah, that proves that it's not all the stereotypical or football fans are idiots, that kind of thing. And it worked for me as well. It's like, well, there's a drag performer here, but he's actually telling me a story, and it's actually really, really interesting, and I'm going to listen to this. So, yeah.
What is something that you morally disagree with?
Animal cruelty, I absolutely cannot stand. I don't see there's any reason for mistreatment of an animal. They didn't ask for it. And that can be in any profession, any industry. So, yeah, animal cruelty, I'm so against.
Thank you. Who are your three fantasy dinner guests and why?
My three fantasy dinner guests, they would all be very, very, very learned people within the science community. So, I mean, can I name the names?
Yes.
Oh, it would be Dr. Hannah Fry or Professor Hannah Fry. It would be Alice Roberts. And it would be my absolute all-time favourite historian, Bethany Hughes.
No Shakespeare?
No. The thing is, I go to the Globe Theatre a lot anyway, and I see a lot of the plays, and I know quite a lot of the plays. But to actually spend time talking to these really powerful women who have got such interesting stories themselves, I think, yeah, that's who I would spend my time with.
Shakespeare will have to buy his own lunch.
Yeah, Shakespeare will have to go to the KFC.
Okay, yeah. No worries. We can do that. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Oh, lighthouse keeper.
Really?
And I still do.
Because?
Because of the quietness, the solitude. I'm never more alone and never more in my own head, which is such a dangerous place to be when I'm with other people. And I hate it, and I hate it about myself. I can't deal with it. So I'm not very social. I mean, I like to think I'm social, but I'm not. I'm not at all. Clearly I've got issues. But oh my God, a lighthouse keeper. If I could go back in time, you know, when they invent the time machine, I will be a lighthouse keeper.
Big lover of the sea as well.
Yeah, lover of the sea. I just love I would just love the solitude, and I would love the space.
And the height.
Oh, the height. Yeah, absolutely.
But you couldn't absolutely. Wear those boots in a lighthouse. No, that would be dangerous.
I'd be forever polishing glass.
You would.
Yeah. And I'd learn Morse code. Yeah, that would be it. That is my dream job to this day, lighthouse keeper, but I just don't think it'll ever happen.
Never say never.
Oh, exactly. You never know. There might be somebody out there that needs a drag storytelling lighthouse keeper.
You'd be unique, I'm sure of that. Who has a big impact on you but does not know it, and why?
I mean, my partner's very important to me. Alison's had to put up with a lot, and sometimes I don't tell her enough. Sometimes I haven't appreciated her as much as I should. In this life, it's so easy to kind of ignore the best things you have. And sometimes those things are right in front of you, but you're just blind to seeing them. Yeah, so I owe a lot, a hell of a lot to my partner, because she's had to put up with a lot. I just probably should tell her more.
I think she might hear this.
Yeah.
And the last question for you.
Yeah.
What would be the title of your life story?
Put the kettle on.
Right now?
Yeah, put the kettle on. Okay. Yeah, put the kettle on. I think so, or something like that, because I'm a huge tea drinker. Huge tea drinker. And I just think there's no problem in this entire world that cannot be solved if you just sit down quietly, calmly, have a cup of tea, and then deal with the issues of the world. So, yeah, I think put the kettle on, have a cup of tea.
Tea is made from water, though.
Yeah.
Blood's thicker than water.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Just giving you a title there. Come
that's
on.
Fine, yeah. But I'll go with the put the kettle on.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Anemia, and thank you for listening. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
I've loved it, and thank you very much for having me.
Thank you.